All right, well, this is a different way of me doing things. My name's Tony Heil, council member in Bridgeport, PA, outside of King of Prussia in Philadelphia. And this is the You Should Run podcast. I'm trying to talk with my new friend Candace Quarles from Texas, first guest from Texas. And if you've been listening, you know we talk about why people ran for office, encouraging other people to run for office, and challenges and opportunities therein. Sorry if my opening is a little bit less jazzed up than sometimes, but got a little bit flustered with figuring out Skype and Google Hangouts and everything today, so I'm not at my technological best, but I think it'll make it work. But I'm looking forward to this conversation. So Candace, nice to meet you.
Good to meet you. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Picked my kids up early today. Well, my one son from kindergarten. My parents are visiting. Planning a bunch of things for this podcast next week in D.C., though this might come out after I talk to those people, so the whole space-time continuum is, you know, interesting.
Awesome. Well, we have some inclement weather here today.
What's inclement weather there compared to here?
So we're having, like, a series of thunderstorms, which will turn into flash floods, so they let school out early. And I have a kinder as well.
Oh, well... We, it's, like 50 degrees here in the Philadelphia area, which it's not supposed to be in January. It's supposed to be cold.
Right.
And I don't mind being 50 degrees, but
yeah,
it still seems wrong. Like, I don't know if I want to complain about the weather, but it's supposed to be 70 degrees this weekend. And maybe this climate change thing, we should finally start taking seriously.
But... we should probably look into it. Right. Now, if it's 50 there, it's about 65 here.
Okay.
And That's still a little warm for us. I mean, we don't get too cold, but it's still a little warm for us. So, but worse than that is the change. So it's supposed to be like 44 tomorrow. So big drop, and then we're supposed to get snow, which is a big deal.
Oh, I bet if there's flurries in Texas that shut down the whole state.
Yeah, like it will say flurries, but it'll be like an ice storm because it won't be that cold. So the temperature drop and then it'll get back warm again. So, yeah, that definitely will shut down the whole state.
Well, more importantly than the weather, tell me about Texas and what you do, because it sounds like from talking to people online, from looking at things from groups like Run for Something and Emerge and other groups, Texas is a really important state in 2020, and not so much, or maybe not because of the presidential race, but because of a lot of other things happening there, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, just the slow and steady wins the race, and that's what's happening in Texas. So we were notoriously solid red conservative state, and we still are in a lot of areas, but the demographics are changing so fast. So with this redistricting of new congressional seats, so we're supposed to get plus three, maybe four congressional seats. I'm not a native Texan myself. I'm from St. Louis originally, so I've been here 12 years. My husband's from Flint, so I couldn't tell you exactly how many thousands of new Texans we get every day, but we get a healthy amount, enough where we're going to get three congressional seats. And with those changes coming from people coming from all over, from New York, from the Midwest, from California, they are bringing their political ideologies with them, and that is changing the state faster than I guess some had imagined. So what's happening is that a lot of our it was solid red. We have a Republican governor all the way down until you get to seven of the 10 largest counties, solid blue: Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, El Paso. And it's changing. So we are 9 seats away from being the majority in the Texas House. Previous to last midterm election, so November 2018, we had a really big election. And we almost had presidential turnout during a midterm year. We had an exciting Senate race going on, a couple of down ballot races, and then also our congressional seat in North Texas flipped red to blue. And that was George Bush's backyard. So the time is really changing really fast. And with that, we have some opportunities to take advantage of. And I'm here in North Texas and Dallas County, solid blue, but around our suburbs and things like that, that's where the work is to be done.
Yeah, I have family in the Dallas area. I'm not sure if they're in Dallas or in Fort Worth. I don't remember off the top of my head. But so have you always been political and nature? Is it something you've always cared about? And as an African-American woman, I feel like in comparison to me being neither of those things, your life is almost inherently political. So I don't know how you not pay attention, I guess, is a way of saying it.
Yeah. I would say I probably, you know, my parents really weren't political folks, just regular people working every day. They probably didn't vote to 2008 when Barack Obama was on the ballot.
Wow.
So I didn't really grow up in a political household. Once I moved to Texas, I started getting involved in organizations and groups and trying to, you know, just see kind of how this works. And that's when I started to, well, I remember I deputized to register people to vote in 2007, and that's kind of was my entryway. But now I pay attention, of course, and now I understand about the importance of Black women and their voting in the Democratic Party, and along with running for office myself, just organizing get out the vote block walks for Democrats, making sure that people have meet and greets, making sure my residents know that there is an election coming up, even if there is only a constitutional election or a bond election, and just keeping them engaged and informed is kind of the role I've taken on in addition to my city council role.
So, and what led you to running for city council? And I understand it's, you know, it's a complicated thing to do. You learn a lot on the job, no matter how much, you know, you can never be prepared enough for it. But what kind of motivated you to take that leap?
Well, it was, let's see, 2016. So there was a vacancy. So my council rep ran for mayor. So it was the rest of her term. So it was kind of a, we need someone to run. It was for 2 years of a 3-year term. And then I just kind of been interested, but I had no idea it would be that soon. It was one of those, oh, okay, the seat's 6 years. Oh, we have 2 3-year terms. I have time. By the time it's up, I'll have time to really get my head around that I really want to do this. Well, it came faster than expected. And I said, okay, well, I went to a couple of training programs the party introduced. And I said, well, I'll try it. And if it doesn't work, then at least I tried. Mm-hmm. And if they want me, they want me. If they don't, they don't. So I ran for re-election in 2018. So now I'm in my first full 3-year term. And it's been amazing. It's been a learning experience, like you said. And then also, I just think local politics is just different, you know,
it's
a whole different level of closeness to community and immediate impact that I know, I really wouldn't see at the state level in Austin. And then some of the back and forth and the infighting that we see in Congress, I'm happy where I'm at.
So I think, you know, when I got onto my borough council, which is smaller than your city council, there's a lot of things that I learned. I had to sit back. I didn't have to sit back, but I didn't want to jump into things until I knew how it worked, because I was afraid of making a fool of myself. And I think a lot of people are like that. They want to, not because I didn't think I was smart, but just I want to do things the right way. So what are things you think if someone running for city council or council like that, they should be prepared to learn?
I mean, yeah, so much. You're not expected to know everything. I mean, I was just telling someone the other day, I was like, the level of knowledge I have on wastewater and flushes and how that has to do with drainage systems in a city,
yeah,
compared to 3 years ago, you know, and I still know nothing about it, but I know more than I did. I just say being open to there are things you've never had to think about before, and also you think of it from your perspective as maybe the consumer or the neighbor, the citizen. So now you're thinking of it as, okay, this impacts, you know, 53,000 residents, and this 1.003% increase in sales tax, it means this much to the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell people, you know, understand that you won't know everything. Be open. Research. And the cool thing about cities is that you aren't the first. So there is no shortage of other elected officials in local jurisdictions, specifically, you know, in Texas, that you could call and say, hey, what's this? I've never heard of this. What are we doing? What's the background in this? So it's a steep learning curve, and being okay with not knowing. And then also at some point, you know, still being able to push an agenda, make sure you're there to represent the people you said that you would, and then really kind of throwing down and making sure that, you know, you're taking advantage of the time while you're there to actually get something done.
Yeah, I was telling people who got sworn into office this week or recently in local offices across the state and or my state and the country, you know, congratulations for having all these ideals, and now you're going to learn about sewer plants. That's
Exactly.
It's not really, sewer plants are rarely the reason people run for office, but it's now, if I get a chance to talk to my Congress member, I want to ask them about money for a sewer plant. We can handle war and healthcare later, but for now, can you help us pay for our sewer plant?
Right, exactly. No, I completely get you on that. Same way here, it's like, hey, flooding was never really like a concern as, you know, growing up, like, oh, I gotta, now I'm, every time there is a major storm or rain, flooding is top of mind. Even though it's temporary, we don't have rain often. When we do get it, it is, you know, five times as much as we normally would, and there is a flooding situation. So being briefed on that and having temporary plans for it, and then knowing that, hey, you might have 103 days of 100 degree weather for 100 days, and you pray for rain. So yeah, that's the flip side of it.
Yeah, and you know, you bring up a point in how you're saying it. When you are just a regular citizen or voter, you'll be concerned about an issue like climate change, which I think is very important. And then when you're in local office as a city council member, a mayor, or something like that, you realize the expense in money, time, and people to handle these big issues on a local level. And it gives you a different perspective. Like, no, we really need to address this in a way that is going to not negatively impact our area. Because I don't know what we will do if we suddenly have hurricanes in our area. We don't have the infrastructure for it.
Exactly. Really. Yeah, exactly.
So what are you have stuff you're doing in Texas, though, because you're interested in your city council stuff, but you're helping to promote people there, right?
Yeah, so I would, so basically, we are nonpartisan at the local level. We're 100% volunteer, so we do not get paid anything, and you just have to love community to do this job. we are nonpartisan, so what I do is to help in any way that I can with the Democratic Party, with my community. We are 69% African American and 11% Hispanic. And one of the strongest voting bases in Dallas County. So I want to make sure that my residents are informed that, hey, our primary is March 3rd. So we're a Super Tuesday state. Early voting starts February 17th. So how do my residents know they're going to be our primary ballots by 30 pages? how do they know who to vote for? Who have they met? Candidate forums, meet and greets, policies and issues and things that they care about. So I just kind of taken on that role of making sure that if they want to have an event or making it easy for the candidates for judge to come through and meet folks, answer questions for them. So I have a YouTube channel called Candid with Candace. And what I do is I talk about different topics on there, like what's a precinct chair? It's one of the most important roles in elected office. But we have a shortage of them. We have 785 precinct chairs in Dallas County alone. So how do we make sure if someone wants to be in office one day, a great stepping stone would be become a precinct chair? Well, what's a precinct chair? So we did videos on that. I'll do videos on the primary and the general. Why will your ballot look different? And we have an open primary, so you could vote for the Republican ballot in March, and then November you could flip. But explaining that to our residents and making sure that they're informed, and then any questions that they come up with, that I'm available to answer for them.
And was this stuff that you knew really well from your previous work, or as you do this and you talk to people, are you learning a lot along the way? I know I'm learning a lot from talking to people. So have you learned a lot through just these discussions?
Oh, yeah. I have to research myself before a lot. So, I know the basics of what a ballot's going to look like and difference between March and November. But, when I'm talking to them about anything, we have we had a constitutional amendment in November, and there were 10 propositions. And, I have to educate myself a lot.
That's a lot.
What the thing you're talking about. What are they actually doing? So some things, and then you realize, so I have a Facebook page where they can submit questions, and they ask about the same questions. It's really crazy how, really the same questions come in, and you think everyone knows these things, and they'll say, I went in there, and I didn't see, Donald Trump on my ballot for president. I wanted to make sure I didn't vote for him. And I go, well, it's the primary ballot, so you have to pick the Democrat or Republican ballot slip. It's either or, and he wouldn't be on that one if you picked the Democratic ballot. So it's simple things like that.
Yeah, I think it's important to us as people who get involved to and run for office, even if whether you're an elected official or a candidate, to become an educator and pay it forward, because there's a lot of things that, why would people know this? Why would people know what a precinct chair is? There's no reason to know that in life if you work as a doctor even, or a teacher, until you get involved.
Exactly. No, exactly. So, and then there is no venue to really ask if, it's one of those things, like the people who know really know. And then, like you said, a doctor might feel like, I should probably know these things. I am a well-educated person. But a lot of times, what venue, what avenue are you going to go and just ask random questions of, well, why is it like this? And I go, well, you live in a certain precinct, and, certain precincts are counted in a certain way. And this is, what we're expecting in it. So just being open to them. And it just helps me to gather. When I get questions, that's when I know what kind of videos to talk about. That's when I know what they're Google searching in our county. And I usually, around the same certain times, that people are, what website do I go to see the ballot?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's a link, and I'll post the whole ballot, take pictures of it, show it on the Facebook page. This is your upcoming ballot. Be ready. It's 37 pages.
37 pages? Really?
Yeah. So we're so, what do you call it? Packed and stacked. So we have really hard primaries, and then our, uncompetitive generals.
Oh, wow. So, we have so many. Our ballot this year will have the president, state senator, state rep, and Congress. And I think that's it. Unless we get any
Really?
Yeah, we have in the odd number elections in Pennsylvania, we have the row offices and judges. So it's like 2 pages. So it's still a lot of candidates, but I've never had to be more than 2 pages of looking through things.
Oh, yeah. So we have a presidential, the Senate races, and then all the appellate courts, the different levels of courts, the judges, the constables. And then we do get down to, if there is a local election that falls on the same date, then they'll try to put those together for easier for city purposes. And I have some issues with that, but they'll put them at the bottom as well. Our ballot was pretty long last cycle. And because of our district, we have 7 or 8 candidates running for every judicial seat on the Democratic side.
Wow. And last year, I know in Texas, a lot of Democrats and a lot of women won for a lot of judicial races, right? It was a big national news story saying, whoa, something might be happening in Texas. And what's that going to mean for next year?
Yeah, I think in Harris County, 17 African-American women were elected judges.
You can't get 17 African-American women elected across a state in most states. So for that one thing, that's amazing.
Yeah. So in Harris County, and that's another thing I try to get people to understand how big Texas is.
Right.
I'm like, oh yeah, it's big. Well, it's huge because we have 28 million Texans, 29. And then Harris County alone, which is encompasses Houston, has 2.2 million people who live in Houston alone.
That's more than a lot of states.
Three suburbs.
Yeah.
Around that. So yeah, it's massive. Dallas County, same way, 40 municipalities inside of Dallas County, and then about 1.25 million Dallasites inside Dallas County. And we're in DeSoto, so we're in Dallas County. So yeah, in between that, Houston, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, El Paso, those are in our bright red sea of a red state, these dark blue dots. But those dark blue dots represent about 7 to 8 million people.
But those dark blue spots seem to be spreading a little bit from what you're seeing in the maps. Almost the entire border between Texas and Mexico is getting bluer. And you see some other spots, like you just said. What do you think is driving this change in Texas? And is it real or is it just an aberration?
Like you said your family lives in Tarrant County. So Tarrant County is one of those places to watch. We talk about top counties to watch and see the outcomes of 2020. So Tarrant County, I think President Obama lost that by like 20 points in 2012. 2016, President Trump won that by less than like 5 points. So last election, Tarrant County voted at 46.8%. So this is one of those purple counties. Tarrant County is Fort Worth, so another large city in Texas. I think what's driving that is transplants. I think it's transplants driving it. We have, I don't know how many thousands of Texans we have every day coming, but tons. I can tell by the traffic increase since I've been here. More and more of my family's moving here. We have no state income tax, so I think that's a big piece. Our unemployment's less than like... in Dallas County, less than like 3.5%. So we have no shortage of jobs moving here. Big corporations like Toyota moving from wherever in California, they move their headquarters to Texas. So along with those 10 to 20,000 employees also moved here. And they come here, a house in California. I know an employee that works there. They said, I could buy two homes for the price in Texas of what I was paying back in California. So we have lots of land. Our housing market is still beautiful. I mean, 2,000 square foot, 2,000-3,000 square, maybe 2,500 square foot home, you can still get it like 180, 200,000 in a nice suburban neighborhood.
The houses here and where I am, it's like in the Philadelphia area, you'll get a twin in the suburbs here for $250,000, $300,000 even. There's some in my neighborhood in Bridgeport that are going for up to $400,000. And the plot of land is a postage stamp. It's like you don't really get much space. And the houses are nice.
And we know about size of lots and lands, right? So 10,000 square foot lots, 12,000 square foot lots. We like our land in Texas.
That's bigger than my town. Yeah. Like my town... My borough is under 1 square mile.
Okay. So yeah, it's land. So
yeah.
People come here and they, especially from California and New York, the sticker shock of what you can buy for a home is like wow. So I think people are on to that, and then weather. You know, yeah, we have hot summers, but you know, snow's not really a thing.
Do you think that the changing politics and the changing views of Texas might be driving people to come there that wouldn't otherwise, too? Because there's a lot of people over my lifetime who've been like, Texas, that's someone else can go there. And now it seems people feel more open to it, like, oh, Texas is different than I remembered.
Yeah, I think it is. So I tell people the Texas is conservative, of course, but it was very business friendly. And I think the business friendly conservative is just the moniker. It's just entrepreneurship and, you know, those type of the George Bush Texan. Remember, George Bush used to be our governor. and successful business owner, family owned business. Like, that's how we know George Bush the president, the second. And that's really indicative of the culture of Texas. Is very business friendly. So the conservative views of, like, some of the I remember in our 2000, whenever Ted Cruz was elected, I think he was elected in 12.
Yeah.
And we started doing the same-sex bathroom issue. Remember all that?
Well, yes.
Places were losing, you know, like championships and national games because of these gender bathroom type policies. That really wasn't us. Until that level of conservative came in, and then the business community came back and actually lobbied against that. It was a weird time. The business community came in and said, hey, we're not going to go that far. And that's really what stopped a lot of those laws, not any liberal or progressive groups in Texas. So I think with that, and then, you know, there are some shades of, like anything, shades of red, shades of blue. And you see all of that in Texas. So I welcome it.
Yeah, me too.
As we get more, I welcome it. As we redraw these redistricting lines, I also welcome that as well.
Yeah, and for the future, if Texas becomes a blue state, then Republicans have almost no chance of winning an electoral margin in the country. Like, if because they're winning, they're changing some other states, but Texas is growing, and if it's growing more open-minded to these things, then that's going to portend, hopefully, some good wins in the future.
Definitely. We have 38 electoral votes, and no matter of, you know, how many Ohio's, Wisconsin, Michigan's you put together, it's still 38. Yep. And if you were to flip that, they'll definitely have a very hard time getting, you know, Texas has been one of those reliable things. And also, they also have to spend money here. So we've never really had competitive presidential races come and, like, court us because either side, we've never had,
right,
you know, they never had to come. So now they're coming, both sides, and you see President Trump doing rallies in Texas. That really kind of wasn't a thing previous races because they didn't have to. So now I see it as, you spend money here in Texas, then you're not spending it somewhere else. So that's the least we could do at this point.
So finally, it's the You Should Run podcast. You've seen a lot of changes in your state. You've run for a local office. Why should more people be running for office and considering it in 2020 or beyond in local races, either local races, state legislatures, whatever?
Yeah, I think local politics is where it's at. And one, it is the closest to the people. We are the most engaged with our constituents. We know what they need. We live here. Seeing a person come and talk to me about the water bill at Albertsons, that's something that's not going to happen at the state level, of what, you know, what we vote on Tuesday impacts them directly. Then also, it's in an engaged or increased level of engagement that's happening. And a lot of these things that we're implementing at the local level, like we passed paid family leave here in DeSoto, Texas, something I championed. Now they're talking about it at the federal level. This has been talked about since 1993 when it was implemented. We implemented Family Leave Act, but it was not paid.
Mm-hmm.
So if the way that you see faster change is going to be at the local level. This one is the closest to the people, and you're going to actually have a little bit more control. So I really wish more people would pay attention. Local level turnout, and we're also the worst in voter turnout. So we're 4% at the local level. And that's high in my state.
Yeah, well, that's why.
The city of Dallas had an election in May, and they did not crack 10%. So I think we're 48th in voter turnout in the 50 states. So there's opportunity in that. And that is by design, definitely not by happenstance. We had six elections in 2018. Six times you had to come out and vote. Because we don't put our local elections on the same as the federal elections, the runoffs. Oh, we also do runoffs too, 50% plus one.
Right.
I don't think you guys do that.
No, we don't. But in some ways, that's good. But you're right. When it gets complicated, the turnout goes down. My first race, granted, my borough was small, but there I got 11 votes and I won. That was in the primary, and no one came out in the primary. It wasn't competitive. But the thing is, when turnout's low, anyone can win. And that might
anyone can win. Right. And that's exactly how they've been controlling our school boards and city councils for so long, because if I only have to get to 4% of the population in a city, yes, I can control all kinds of things about your textbooks, prayer in school, funding for after school. And that's what they've been doing. And they've done it really well.
Yeah,
people are paying attention. And I'm glad more people are on board for school board and city council specifically.
Yeah, me too. So before I go, how can people follow you and learn more about your work and follow you on social media?
Yeah, so it's Candice Quarles on social media, on Facebook. It's Candice, is how you spell Candice. And then YouTube is Candid with Candice. Instagram is Candid with Candice. And anytime you just want to reach out, send me a message, Candice@CandiceQuarles.com is my email. And I'm happy to help anyone that is running anywhere. I've done this before, where I'll go and look up some weird town in Washington and let me look at your city charter and see when your seat's up so we can figure out how to get you in the office. So anyone that wants that type of support, I certainly can do that.
Great. Well, I appreciate it. Look up what Candice is doing. Find out some information. Maybe she'll be a resource to you. And if you're listening, I hope that you'll consider running for office as well, or prodding your friends and family to do it, unless your family's crazy. As long as your family's good. And make sure to subscribe and like this channel. Tell your friends to listen to the You Should Run podcast, review and whatnot. Thank you so much, Candice, for taking time today.
I appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.